From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, a remembrance of the holidays. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm Yvette Benavides. The holidays are a time of stories. There's the divine story of the birth of Jesus and the almost infinite volume of personal stories from each of our families. We at Texas Matters are pausing to listen to those stories, and we encourage you to tell your stories to your loved ones. Later, we'll hear from a group of Texas women writers sharing their childhood stories of Christmas. But first, I'd like to read a story my mother wrote about a Christmas she had in Laredo many years ago. A Christmas to Remember by Luisa Benavides. During my childhood in Laredo, Texas in 1947, my family consisted of my elderly grandfather, my mother, who had become a single mom 2 years earlier when my father left us, and my seven siblings. We were three girls and five boys in ages ranging from 14 years to 2 years. I was the fifth child and was 7 years old that year. Since we lived with my grandfather, we didn't worry about rent. However, I recall my mother worrying about money for food and the utility bills. Each early December, my mother made sure to tell us that Santa had money problems because of the war, so that we might not expect the many items we asked for in our letters to him. Because of her strong Catholic faith, she emphasized the real meaning of the holiday. That year was no different. My mother reminded us again gently of the real reason for the season as we put up our Christmas tree, which was actually a salt cedar branch with homemade decorations and no lights. My mother desperately tried to save a few dollars so that her children would have some semblance of a Merry Christmas. The older children helped our mother with her plan. My sister Yola, the oldest of us eight children, at 14 years of age, wrote 16 as her age on the employment application and started working at a store called Neisner's, one of four large 5- and 10-cent stores on Convent Avenue in downtown Laredo. To save money, Yola took a homemade sandwich for her lunch break, or my mother would send her a home-cooked meal with one of the older kids. On Saturdays, my 10-year-old sister Chayo and I would volunteer to take the meal. Chayo was familiar with the streets to and from downtown. We were excited to take that stroll, especially during the Christmas season. This mid-December, the stores were already in full bloom, with Christmas decorations, beautiful music, and enticing sales. On that Saturday, a few days before Christmas, Chayo and I quickly made the lunch delivery to Yola at work and then walked up and down the aisles of not only Neisner's, but those of Cress's, Woolworth's, and McClellan's, the other large stores on Convent Avenue. After roaming the aisles of the other stores, we went back to Neisner's for one last look. It was hard for the smaller kids to get close to see and touch the toys. I was pushed aside by people trying to get closer to the counter. Suddenly, I felt someone next to me down at my ear level. She whispered to me in Spanish, ¿Cuál te gusta, chiquita? Which one do you like, little one? I looked up and saw a tall, beautiful older woman smiling at me. She was dressed impeccably in an expensive-looking black dress. Without speaking, I timidly pointed to a red play iron. She immediately told the clerk to wrap it up before turning back to me to ask, ¿Cuál otro te gusta, mi cielo? I couldn't believe my ears. She asked me to select another toy. I was totally perplexed and worried as my mother's warnings about accepting stuff from strangers came to my head like a splash of cold water. But I set that aside long enough to timidly answer that I also liked the 20-piece dish set. I turned to look at my sister, who stood behind me nodding approvingly. The beautiful lady picked up the dish set and gave it to the clerk to wrap. But incredibly, she also included a beautiful baby doll, a doll's dress, and a laundry set of a play washtub and clothesline with several colorful clothespins. Waiting for the large, heavy bundle of goodies felt like an eternity. While we waited patiently but eagerly, the lady bent down to whisper in my ear again. She softly recited a short prayer and asked me to repeat it. I did, and I have remembered and recited it daily ever since. Niñito Jesús, amor mío, dame tu corazón y toma el mío. Roughly translated as, Beloved baby Jesus, give me your heart and take mine in return. The lady patted my head as she handed me the bag with all my treasures and with a big smile said, Feliz Navidad, chiquita, que Dios te bendiga. Merry Christmas, little one, may God bless you. Later, I couldn't recall if I had even thanked her. I became sick with worry about what my mother's reaction would be. When we got home, my sister explained the whole thing to my mother. I was relieved when my mom looked over at me and told me I could keep the toys. However, I noticed there was a sad look on my mother's face when she saw the beautiful doll, the iron, and the 20-piece dish set. Seeing her sadness made me sad, too. A few days later, on Christmas Day, Santa brought me a tiny play iron, a little rag doll, and a 12-piece dish set. The quality couldn't compare to the lady's expensive gifts, but to a 7-year-old who knew Santa's financial problems because of the war, his gifts were even more precious. My mom smiled as she saw me playing with my Christmas toys. Through the years, I have thought of the elegant woman in black as an angel sent by God to give a poor little 7-year-old girl incredible happiness at a difficult time, and left her a beautiful prayer to recite for the rest of her life. Mujeres Writing Group in San Antonio share their childhood holiday stories. The Mujeres have just published their third anthology, including stories of family and faith.
My name is Mary Olivia Patiño, and my story is Feliz Navidad, Christmas en la calle Matamoros. It is early November, and signs of the Christmas holidays are visible. Driving on Southwest Military Drive, on the way to visit my sister, a white tent on a mall parking lot catches my attention. The enormous tent proclaims in bold letters, Christmas trees for sale. The Christmas trees have arrived, I say to myself, but they will be dry by Christmas. I love the touch and fragrance of fresh, green Christmas trees. What was our first Christmas tree like, I wonder? I cannot remember having a Christmas tree when I was young. Frankly, I don't remember much about celebrating Christmas when I was a child. I decide to ask my mother. A few days later, at her house, I blurted out, Mother, we never had a Christmas tree when we were little, ¿verdad? I sneak a peek at her while eating enchiladas at her kitchen table. Across the room, she stands by the stove, serving a plate. Seguro que sí, of course we did. My mother sounds indignant. Era una rama, pero teníamos nuestro árbol. It was a sparse tree, but we had our tree. The long branches held short, rounded leaves. You were 5 years old. We lived in la calle Matamoros. It was either Panchita or Raquel or Tania. I don't remember who that brought us the tree. The women lived in the same apartment building. They brought us food and other items, all donated by the Methodist or the Baptist church nearby. Hearing this story, I learn that our first Christmas tree was the equivalent of a modern-day Charlie Brown tree. After that time, Mother continues, we had other Christmases, but that was our first, in la calle Matamoros. Mother is 83 years old, yet she still recalls what our tree looked like in our first Christmas. While I do not remember the tree, one special moment comes to mind. The setting is the YMCA down the block on Matamoros Street. Closing my eyes, I observe a scene through the lens of time. It is a cool evening. My sisters, Rosemary, Bertha, and I are standing outdoors. We are in line waiting to reach the door of the YMCA. Now it is my turn. My hand reaches out to take a small brown bag. It has apples and oranges. Yummy. My eyes light up when I am given a red plastic netted stocking filled with candies. What wonderful surprises. Gracias, I say shyly. Looking back at these memories, I can see it was not easy for my mother with three girls. She was a single mom. When I was four, my sisters and I stayed in Falfurrias with our abuelitos, while mother came to San Antonio looking for work. She did not speak English, and the jobs she found as a waitress called for long, arduous shifts. It was tough making ends meet. I imagine it was difficult for her to request assistance. Being children, though, we were not aware of our poverty or the challenges she met daily. Reflecting on these childhood memories, I feel so much gratitude. I will never know the names or recall the faces of the persons who helped, but to us, they were angels. They gave from their hearts to three little girls. Yes, I have a few lasting impressions of the Christmas season, after all. We lived in La Calle Matamoros for just a few months before moving to the east side of San Antonio. But maybe, just maybe, starting out with such a tiny leftover tree in that one-room apartment is the reason that I always search out the tallest, freshest green tree in the entire lot.
My name is Belsa Elia Ramos. My story is White Christmas in South Texas. All our Christmases were white in South Texas as our little frame home by the Rio Grande morphed into a Currier and Ives White Christmas scene. Our very own Santa Claus came from Cuero, Texas around mid-November, bearing sacks of pecans, apples, oranges, ribbon candy, and the biggest peppermint sticks ever. Dios Salvador even laughed like Santa, eyes crinkling, belly shaking. But his was not a big ho, ho, ho laugh, rather a whizzing that started deep in his gut. I feared he'd faint until he'd scoop me up on his knee. For several days, he filled our lives with his contagious laugh and pranks. Before he left, Tio would dump a sack of pecans from a tree as we gleefully dodged them below. He wanted us to have the experience of picking pecans. It was curious to see Mama not as a mom, but a kid playing with her older brother. As soon as he left, preparations for the holidays started. We shelled lots of pecans for Mama to use in the stuffing, candies, pan de polvo, and pies. For weeks, our house filled with mouth-watering aromas, tempting us to sneak a taste. Everything for our Thanksgiving and Christmas dinners was homemade and homegrown. After Thanksgiving, out came this year's catalog for our inspiration from its offerings of Christmas cards, ornaments, and nativity sets. We colored loose leaf paper to make chain link garlands and snowflakes for our windows and tree. Then we would gut the catalog to cut out all the figures of the nativity, back them with cardboard, and place them in the pesebre Papa had made a long time ago from twigs and straw. We made our own ornaments, tatted or crocheted snowflakes, angels, candles, and ice skates with paper clip blades. As we worked, Mama told us the story of the birth of Jesus, quoting scripture from memory. If a rare norther blew in, Papa fed logs into the chimenea to keep us warm. Not all was idyllic harmony with my older brothers and me. They teased me about my mouth moving in rhythm with my sisters or because I pressed my tongue against my upper lip in concentration. One evening, my brother broke the kerosene lamp tube with a string wet with saliva. Blink! We froze suddenly in pitch darkness. Mama lit a candle. ¿Quién fue? Papa sputtered. I pointed to my brother, and Papa took him to the shed for a whipping. I cried with some remorse, but mostly fear of retaliation. A week before Christmas, we cut the perfect mesquite or willow branch for our tree, stuck it into a can full of dirt, flocked it with homemade flocking, and hung the ornaments on it, a big foil star on top. We spread flocking on the windowsills, the crutch, the edge of the roof, and front stoop to look like accumulated snow. The wise men started their journey from the back door, reaching baby Jesus on Three Kings Day, when we all knelt in adoration. Next day, the tree came down, and we had to clean up all that snow. Oh, what fun it was to stay up for Misa de Gallo, midnight mass. At 11 p.m., we went to church to see the live nativity scene and sing, Noche de paz, noche de amor, and other carols. After mass, everyone came to our house, including the priest, for a desayuno of yeast bread and chocolate con canela. At dawn, parents walked home carrying sleeping kids and sacks full of goodies, thanks to Tio Salvador. One year, Madrina Lila, my confirmation godmother, gave me a beautiful pair of pink socks with lace at the cuff and a toothbrush stuck into a plastic snowman. I stared speechless, not quite sure what I should say or do, until Mama poked me to say, thank you. For me, the family preparations, sharing a meal with relatives and friends, and worshiping together is the essence of Christmas that I have instilled in my children.
My name is Janie Alonso, and my story is Hard Candy Christmas. Cleaning my kitchen floor, I leaned against my broom and listened to Dolly Parton sing sweetly on the radio. I'll be fine and dandy. Lord, it's like a hard candy Christmas. Talking back to her through the radio, I said, Oh, Miss Dolly, I know what you're talking about. The song lyrics transferred me to a sixth grade Christmas party at Lock Hill Elementary School in 1966. The week before the party, I gathered enough courage to ask my mom to buy a Christmas present for the gift exchange. For a family of 10, a request for any present was a waste of breath. The answer was always no. We didn't even try. But this was my last year before junior high, so I dared to ask. To my surprise, my parents agreed, but they could only spend a small amount. I was so glad when they brought the Lifesavers Sweet Christmas storybook that had 6 rolls of different flavored Lifesavers. My favorites were peppermint and butter rum. If they were mine, I would have taken each roll and hidden them away from everybody else. They could have lasted until the end of the Christmas break. The day of the party, I proudly took my present to school. After recess, we gathered all the presents together and the teacher numbered each one. Everyone drew a number. A boy got my gift and he looked happy. Finally, there were 2 small boxes left, and another girl got the second to the last gift. She shook it first, listened, and then slowly opened it. Inside was a beautiful gold-colored necklace. Dangling from the end was a round container that looked like a small bingo cage. Inside were several rhinestones, freely moving with each shake of her hand. She walked around, showing it to all the girls. Isn't it beautiful? All the girls oohed and awed. And who could blame them? It was the most beautiful necklace I had ever seen. It sparkled like jeweled rainbows. It mesmerized me as it swayed back and forth like a glittery cobra. My number was called, and I got the next small box. It was wrapped with red tissue paper, and I opened it quickly. I promised myself that I would take care of that necklace and never let anyone borrow it. I would even take a bath with it. I would not dare risk losing it. In my excitement, my fingers fumbled, trying to get to the golden prize. And there, inside the small 3x1-inch box, were two small wrapped candies, one peppermint and one butterscotch. I stared at them, willing them to change into a necklace. I blinked once, twice, three times. Yep, they were still candies. I could feel my eyes starting to water and my lips starting to tremble. The floodwaters were right at the dam. A sweet girl's voice brought my head up. "I hope you like your candies," she said. Her smiling face was shining brightly like the rhinestones on that elusive necklace. Looking at her, I could see that she was very proud of her gift. "Yes, thank you," was all I could say. At that moment, I realized there were others poorer than me, and this was all she could afford, and it would not be our first or last hard candy Christmas.
I'm Maria Gabriela Madrid, and the story title is Why. Christmas has always been a busy season for my family, and on December 1976, it not only meant to display the nativity set under the chimney, the Christmas tree with its ornaments beside the stairs, to place the best china on the table, but also to cook the traditional dishes. The night of December 21st, the doorbell rang several times, but I chose not to open the door. I knew that as a Christmas tradition, my friends were probably waiting for me to approach the door so they could run and hide across the street. That night, after my mom welcomed my aunts and grandma inside the house, the first question that came out of my mom's mouth was if they had brought sugar. And after all, nodding yes, in a blink of an eye, everybody was around the table making traditional dishes such as hallacas, pan de jamón, dulce de lechosa, and among other delicious things, my favorite dessert called dulce real. The background plays songs called gaitas, with a beat that made anyone dance. But I was shy, and to me, it was uncool to dance or to sing protest songs. My dad told me that they were written to make others aware of all the people not having food to eat or gift to exchange during the Christmas season. Since 1974, Venezuela became a very rich country. It was a year where Venezuela had full ownership of all the oil and mine revenues. And as everyone believed, it was only a matter of time for all its citizens to improve their lifestyle. Unfortunately, 2 years later, for most Venezuelans, there was still no food on the table. However, my family was safe, and despite the shortage, we managed to get sugar from family members. Right then, I knew that by counting on each other, I was experiencing the true meaning of Christmas. "Gabby, pass me the sugar. Which one, white or brown?" "It doesn't matter," said Grandma. "Do you want me to mix them together?" "Yes, Gabby, and you will see it will add flavor to the dessert." "I guess you mean more richness, huh?" said Dad. "Yes," said Grandma, laughing. That night, I wanted to know more. So I bombarded my mom and dad with questions about the origins of St. Nicholas, Santa Claus, Papa Noel, and else. And as my mom told me later, I upset them too much with all the why. 3 nights went by, and each of us went downstairs at different times to eat dulce real, a dessert made of scrambled eggs and honey. I still can feel my mouth drooling just by imagining the eggs and honey going down my throat. On December 24, the house was at its best. The chimney was the setting for all the mountains made of newspaper covered by musgo, grass brought from the Andean mountains, a broken mirror as a lake, and figurines painted in Italy. The Christmas tree had white lights, big and small colorful angels, and on the top a golden star. On the table were the tablecloths with poinsettias, silver charges, white and golden china, and rainbow color goblets. It was a magical night, where everyone wore the best clothes. As for me, I never got tired of looking myself at the mirror, wearing my shiny red dress. Later, after the midnight mass, my uncle, aunts, grandma, and cousins came for dinner. I always received from St. Nicholas what I asked for, and that Christmas season was no exception. But on December 25th, I got something else I didn't ask on my letter. Under the tree, I noticed that my Christmas letter was still inside my white shoe. Also, on the table, there were the cookies and milk left the night before. And in the nativity set, besides baby Jesus, it was a small jewelry box. To my surprise, I quickly grabbed the box, not grasping yet why would I receive an extra gift. Happy and naive, I was hoping for a ring inside. But instead, it was the darkest call I could ever imagine. Apparently, I asked too many questions, and the call was a reminder that I was bad and needed to do better. So I cried, and until now, I wonder why.
My name is Edna Kitchen, and my story is Christmas Games. I could say that when I was young, Christmas morning at my house was like a fairy tale, that I remember fresh snow falling during the night, my mom and dad sitting by the fireplace with a cup of hot cocoa warming their hands, the tall, green, live Christmas tree wrapped in bright lights and tinsel filled the room with the smell of pine, and resting at its feet were gaily wrapped presents, lots of presents. I could say that, but it would be a lie. The truth was that instead of a fireplace, we had an old space heater. A heater that more than once had left its grilled imprint on the back of my legs because I had gotten too close while trying to get warm. There was no snow on the ground. Heck, in South Texas, if we were really lucky, it would at least be cold. And Mom and Dad were not by the Christmas tree. They were still in bed, door closed, covers over their heads, hoping we would let them sleep for just another hour. Christmas was never really special around our house. With seven children, both my parents worked to provide for us and my grandmother who lived with us. We had a Christmas tree, but it was a small artificial aluminum tree with a color wheel that when plugged in, turned the tree blue, green, red, and yellow, and it had no smell. My mother worked as a waitress at La Fonda on Broadway, and all year long she would save her tips to get us something for Christmas. We had presents, but nothing we could get excited about. Usually socks and underwear, because heaven forbid you had an accident and were taken to the hospital with holes in your underwear. I'm not saying it was bad. It just wasn't special. It wasn't Hallmark special. But the worst part, the part I hated the most, was going back to school after the holidays. I dreaded the question everyone asked, "What did you get for Christmas?" I got one of those dolls, you pull a string from her neck and she talks. She can say six different things, has blonde hair and blue eyes, and she's really pretty, I say all in one breath. She says, "I love you." And for just a second, I almost believe that Chetty Cathy will be waiting for me when I get home. They then ask, "What did you get your parents?" With what, I wonder. But I say anyway, "I got my mom a robe. It's soft and warm and pink." "I got my mom a robe, too," someone else says. I give him a dirty look that says, "You should have picked something else. I got the robe first." He glares right back at me and adds, "And a pair of slippers that match." "Me, too," I yelled out. "I got her pink, fluffy slippers, too." After the Christmas game was over, we all got back to the business of school. No one thought it strange that we never saw any of the new toys and games we had said we'd gotten for Christmas. No one was ever asked to come over and play after school, and no one asked if they could come. I guess part of the magic of Christmas was the magic of make-believe. For one small part of the year, we could pretend. Christmas was a time for wishing, a time for dreaming. It still is.
That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm Yvette Benavides. Texas Matters is co-produced by David Martin Davies. You can download Texas Matters from iTunes and check out past programs on our website at tpr.org. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.